You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
How many afternoons have you found yourself at work and at a loss for what to serve your family for dinner when you get home? A couple of years ago, Kathy Brennan and Carolyn Campion, then new mothers and editors at Saveur magazine, noticed how frequently they were turning to each other and their co-workers to ask, "What are you making for dinner tonight?" And from that, the idea for a cookbook was born. Keepers contains 130 recipes for quality weeknight meals that don't require a big investment of time, money, or energy. It's published by Rodale, and I'm very pleased that it brings Kathy Brennan and Carolyn Campion to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
I understand congratulations are in order. Wasn't Keepers just nominated for an award by the International Association of Cookbook Professionals?
It was. It was amazing to see ourselves up there in the general category, but even more amazing when we found out we were up against Alice Waters and Molly Katzen, two legends in the food world and two of our idols.
And they've both been guests on the show, so I don't know who to root for.
I think after today you have to vote for us.
Okay. So, how are food writers nominated for awards like that? Is it especially gratifying to be nominated by fellow food writers?
I think so. I mean, I call it the SAG Awards of the food world because it's your peers, so it's kind of nice. I mean, there's no red carpet or anything, but, you know, you feel like really a nice validation when it's people like you who've been cooking and writing for years.
But aren't you a bit bored by now? You've already both won several awards, Kathy, the Burt Green and James Beard Awards for food writing, Carolyn, an award, a number of awards for your food blog, Devil and Egg.
I never get sick of them.
What do you keep your little statuettes?
I think the fact that we did this together and it was many years in the making and it really reflects what we go through every day and it's hopefully we're helping people get through Monday to Friday in the kitchen that something like this is pretty special.
Well, I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners who have questions, and we do invite them to join in the conversation at 212-433-9692 or you can go to our website, to our show page at WNYC.org, or write to us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Why do you think people find coming up with ideas for weeknight dinners so difficult?
Well, you know, we talk in the book at one point, like, say, you know, you go to the store and you buy chicken breasts and you go home and you're like, I don't know what to do with these chicken breasts. Or I've been making the same thing with them for years. So you go into the internet and you plug in chicken breast and 600,000 recipes will pop up. And then you're like, well, this doesn't help me. Now I'm paralyzed by choice. So it's,
and then you have to have all the ingredients for some of them.
Exactly.
And they often have something that,
like pomegranate molasses, and you're like, where do I find that? And like food world, we love stuff like that. But the reality is, in a typical suburban kitchen, there's no pomegranate molasses. So we wanted to just narrow things down for people, like make this chicken breast recipe, you know, and you can find everything at your giant supermarket down the street.
You have written that anyone who cooks, no matter how unskilled he or she may be, is the boss when they're in the kitchen and should pat themselves on the back no matter how the meal turns out. Julia Child once said, no matter what happens in the kitchen, never apologize. But it's hard not to apologize when something comes out really overdone or the flavors, you don't want to eat the thing.
Right. It is hard, especially when you have very opinionated children that are giving their feedback and saying, oh, no, this is terrible. Not this again. But I think it's just one of those things where you have to get past that and know that the effort is as important as the outcome in when it comes to weeknight cooking, and you're doing your best to try and feed your family.
Carolyn, you've also given some advice on repairing dishes if you've overseasoned them. What are some of your tips?
Well, okay, I would say our number one thing is before that even you get to that point, taste. I think both of us have experienced meals that we've made and other people have made that you've put all this time and effort. And to be honest, it's not just the time, but it's an emotional act. You're putting all of yourself into this cooking. And then you forgot to season it. You're just such in a rush, or you just can't wait to get it on the table that everyone kind of looks at you and you're expecting this like, ooh, and you're not getting it. You forgot the salt and pepper. So early on, don't ever forget to taste it from the beginning to the end of the dish, not when you're just done, but throughout the process, dip your big soup spoon in there and try it. And then salt and pepper, obviously, but, you know, we love to add acid, you know, meaning citric, lemon, vinegar, just a splash of that can just, I think, it can change an entire dish. It literally will just brighten it. It'll just, you know, it's an amazing thing to do.
What happens when you put in something that's hot and it turns out to be too hot? Is there a way to mitigate that?
Like too much spice?
Yeah.
I think one of the things you can do is anything starchy absorbs flavor. So that's why when you season pasta, you actually have to really salt that cooking water to put that flavor into it. And it's the same theory there, is when you over-season something, if you add some rice, some pasta, any kind of grain, it will soak up that extra spice.
Well, Kathy, you recommend that the pasta should be in water that's as salty as the sea. Well, the only time I ever tasted seawater was that time I almost drowned, so I'm not sure.
That is a slight,
I want to duplicate that experience.
It might be a slight exaggeration, but you'd be shocked. Make pasta one time, barely salt the water, make it another time, and put in way more salt than you think. The second time, it will taste 1,000 times better.
So the pasta never gets too salty?
Well, I guess if your noodles ended up too salty, again, and it comes back to taste them when they're done cooking before you put them in the sauce, you know, just account for that.
We don't want you to have flashbacks or anything like that when you eat your pasta.
Well, Carolyn, you advise readers to plan meals for an entire week in advance. I've heard that advice before.
Mm-hmm.
That planning cuts down on waste and saves time and money, but I don't think too many people actually take that advice.
It's a challenge, and we ourselves don't always have the capability of doing that, because your week is, it's a volatile thing, especially when you have a family. Things pop up. There are people, someone gets sick, someone goes off on a business trip. There's all these factors. But mentally, you can start to prepare a week ahead. If you just mentally, I think we have in the book, if you're thinking at 5 o'clock what you're going to make for dinner that night, it's all over. But on Sunday afternoon, if you're thinking, well, I could roast maybe a couple of trays of vegetables. The broccoli looks really good right now in the market. There's asparagus is starting to come in. So like roasting 4 trays of vegetables, maybe make a pot of brown rice. So you're not planning and freezing for like a week's worth of meals, but you're starting to mentally put yourself in the game. Make a big jar of vinaigrette. That's how we think of planning ahead for the week.
Have those key components in the fridge ready to go. That already puts you way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
What about things that lead to good leftovers? Kathy, you have a recipe called Our Favorite Meatloaf.
Right. There are several dishes in the book that are just lend themselves to making double or even triple. And again, that
That's two lunches at least.
Two lunches at least. But there really is nothing like opening the fridge, I think, on that night that you have a soccer practice 45 minutes away and another child has band practice, or you're just working late yourself, and just having things to start from.
And families are voracious, right? I mean, when you open up a lot of food magazines, it's the yield is 4 to 6. But if you have, we know families who have 3 boys, 4 boys, like hungry preteens, and they will annihilate the contents of your fridge. So having that, you know, 2 meatloafs, that extra one in the fridge, so they come home from practice, they can slice off, make a sandwich. Like thinking more about how families eat, which is that kids are hungry all the time. People eat at different times during the day as well. Someone comes home at 6 and eats dinner. Someone comes home at 8 and eats dinner. So making food that not only you can make extra but taste even better the next day is, I think, a big part of it.
And, Kathy, you suggested that readers get a head start on the week's meals on Sunday by planning, shopping, perhaps even preparing one of the lifesavers you've included in the book. Well, what are lifesavers?
Lifesavers are basic sauces and condiments that you can prepare ahead of time. We'll keep in the fridge for up to a week and basically make everything taste better. So I think we include maybe 10 or so in the book. We have a magic miso mayo. We have a chimichurri sauce. We have a ginger scallion sauce, Swiss chard pesto. And if you can just spend half an hour making 2 of these on the weekend, when you find yourself on a Wednesday with, sometimes it happens, you know, us too, absolutely no time to cook, the best you can do is pick up a roast chicken at the store, and maybe you take some grains that you had a chance to make on Sunday as well, you basically have dinner with this sauce put on top that will make it taste way better.
Yeah, something blah becomes, ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, special.
My guests are Kathy Brennan and Carolyn Campion. Their book, Keepers, 2 Home Cooks Share Their Tried and True Weeknight Recipes and the Secrets to Happiness in the Kitchen. Kathy, Carolyn, your mother was born in Japan?
No, my mother was born in Belgium, and Kathy's mom was born in Japan.
I'm so totally confused.
Funnily enough, they both married Irish-American men.
Yes, who knew?
Did your mother use ingredients that were popular in Japanese cooking?
When I was growing up, every month we got a care package from my relatives in Kyoto, and it was the most amazing thing ever because back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was very hard to get things like miso and certain kinds of sauces and Japanese condiments, but now they're much more readily available. But I grew up very, very much in a dual household of eaters. I had the Irish-American father who just wanted the meat and potatoes, the mother who wanted all, you know, Asian, Japanese food.
And then fish and vegetables.
Exactly. And the kids were sort of straddling both in the middle. So a lot of my, you know, there was a lot of influence that ended up in the book from my mother for sure. And the same with Carolyn with her Belgian family.
Now you include, in fact, a recipe for mussels the Belgian way.
Yeah.
Is mussels the Belgian way any different than mussels the American way?
Well, you know, you have Italian-American mussels with the marinara, and then there's Thai mussels with lemongrass. Like, and mussels are this great, easy ingredient because they're fairly inexpensive. But a lot of people think they can only get them in a restaurant. You know, they never think of making it themselves. But I grew up the Belgian way, which is basically you have your onions, your carrots, your celery as a base, and you steam them in beer or wine. And they're so great. And then you just put a little cream if you're feeling a little decadent. But that was a regular weeknight meal for us.
And how long did they take to prepare?
Like minutes.
Because the mussels, oh, you have to wait until the mussels open up.
Yeah. I mean, when you buy your mussels, nowadays they're pretty clean. When my grandmother or my mother used to buy them, you'd have to scrub them and you'd have to pull the beards off and get the silt out. I once harvested them wild mussels when we were on vacation in Maine, and I did that all myself, and it took hours. I found out later that there was a mollusk red tide scare, and we had already eaten like 5 pounds of the mussels at that point, but we all survived. But that was a lot of work. Nowadays, you go to the fish store, and they do it all for you.
Let's take a call. This is from Michael from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Brian.
I'm Leonard, Michael. It's okay. Or should I call you Joe?
Yeah, sorry. That happens, I guess.
Yes, it does.
I was actually just calling about planning meals. Something my wife and I have been doing for a while that helps is, well, we also use Fresh Direct, so that's part of it. But we'll sit on a Sunday and plan with an app that we have on the phone and on the computer. So what it does is allows you to schedule. So you actually put in, like, a calendar the 5 days of the week, and then you can generate a list of the ingredients, and then we do all the shopping from the computer. So that's a really helpful thing for us that I found.
What's the name of the app?
The app is called Paprika, like the spice. It's a free plug for them as well. But it's on the phone and on the computer, so it's really pretty easy to use.
That's great.
Yeah.
Does it generate a shopping list for you too?
Yeah, and then, you know, the final step would be if the app actually sent the stuff to Fresh Direct, which it doesn't, but it's still pretty easy because you get to see it all collected and you can just go online and sort of add stuff to your cart that you need. And it definitely, like you said, saves a lot of time during the week because we both can, you know, without having to talk to each other on the way home, pick up the phone and look what we're having and what needs to be done and that kind of thing.
Thank you for calling. I wonder if... Whole Foods has an app like that. Because,
they might be working on it right now.
People who are joining us right now will be entered to win a $2,000 Whole Foods gift certificate. You have a lot of well, your criteria here are eating healthy ingredients that are easy to find. That you could fill 3 or 4 cookbooks with that, couldn't you?
Well, it's interesting. When we were doing this book, it came up, like, were there going to be nutritional information, the health? You know, and people are thinking, generally speaking, in a healthier way. I mean, and so, like, using the good fats in moderation and not eating beef every day. And I think that was more our direction, you know, not jumping onto any trend or fad in the diet world, just giving people, like, homemade from scratch cooking.
And did you agree generally on what recipes to include?
I think we did. It was a lot of back and forth. And
we had some good, like, I think having a partnership helps because we would pull each other back and forth. Like, I think we had some passionate arguments about, like, fish sauce, maybe.
I nixed the fish sauce.
Right. You know.
Although I love it, but.
Yeah, like, can people, you know, in the middle of the country at a supermarket buy fish sauce? I think they will be able to soon. But so, you know, Celeriac was a passionate discussion for us I won that one because I grew up eating Celeriac, and I think you're seeing it more. But even if you've seen it, you don't know what to do with it. You're like, what's that ugly, nubby thing on your, in the, you know, now we want to
potatoes and mashed potatoes. It's just delicious.
It's divine. And I mean, raw. I grew up eating raw, and it's like, to me, the best thing. So I'm hoping to, you know, give it its
moment. Also called celery root, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's interesting because it's a celery root, but they actually grow a type of celery that makes a larger root. So, they just pull it out of the ground. It's delicious.
My guests are Kathy Brennan, who's a food and cookbook editor and writer and winner of the Burt Green and James Beard Journalism Awards, and Carolyn Campion, who's a contributing editor at Glamour Magazine. She is a creator of the award-winning food blog, devilandegg.com, and they have collaborated on a book that is ostensibly for people who have families and just want to have quick meals, good quick meals. But I suspect it could be for anybody who needs to do a quick meal after they come home from a long day's work. It is called Keepers. Two home cooks share their tried and true weeknight recipes and the secrets to happiness in the kitchen. It's published by Rodale. And we will continue our conversation, and we'll be taking your calls after we take a brief break. Stay with us. And we are back with Kathy Brennan and Carolyn Campion. Their cookbook, Keepers, Two Home Cooks Share Their Tried and True Weeknight Recipes and the Secrets to Happiness in the Kitchen. It is published by Rodale. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we have gotten a request. Actually, he called but then couldn't stay on the line. Bob from Rego Park, who wants to know your best vegetarian recipe.
Ooh. I think the tomato and zucchini gratin is an amazing one to make in the summer when all those vegetables are so abundant and you're looking for ways to use them up. But it's very simple. You basically just a matter of slicing them and layering them in a gratin or a casserole dish and putting some, I think it's thyme, we do some olive oil, and then a breadcrumb topping with some cheese in there if you want to, and bake it. And it can be a vegetarian entree, it can be a side. It's also good hot, room temperature, cold, just one of those great dishes to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, I like our Swiss chard pesto, too, because, you know, people think pesto is basil, you know, or, you know, it could be pretty much any green or herb. But the Swiss chard, which is really good right now, is delicious. And you don't need the pine nuts either, which are so expensive.
So Swiss chard, because it's in season, but you can just as easily use pretty much any green leafy vegetable, can't you?
Yeah, pesto, to make pesto? Is sort of a big topic. I mean, it doesn't have to be so with parsley and cilantro, basically, any green that you like. But the Swiss chard is nice because it's like hearty and it's like very easy when you put it with walnuts, toasted nuts. It's delicious.
Kale?
I've never done it with kale because
kale might be a little strong.
Kale is a little. We have a kale salad in here, which I love, which is massaging the kale, which is when we were coming up with more vegetarian recipes. We thought pomegranate, kale, these can all go, but you just massage it and then make the leaves a little more silky, and it's delicious.
Now, you also have suggestions for staggering meals because different people come home at different times. But I'm wondering about what happens when there's a vegetarian in the family, there's a pescatarian in the family, and then there are omnivores in the family.
This
we
is
talked
so
about
common.
That a lot.
I know. This is a big
thing. Do you become a short order cook?
We actually don't have a whole section of the book. It's called Toasts, and it sort of addresses that very issue. It's very flexible. Basically, all you do is get your favorite bread, country bread or baguette, slice it, toast it, and then you can put out a variety of toppings. And
people can make what they like.
Make what they like. Put how much of whatever they want on it. And it's
melted
fun.
Tomatoes, you know, smoked salmon with egg salad. But I think the big thing is, I think that's maybe the number one question we get from people is, my daughter's a vegan. My husband's on the paleo diet. My son eats only things that are white. And you're paralyzed because you do think, you know, to be a good mother or a good parent or just anyone who's feeding others, I have to cook what they like. And you shouldn't. I mean, I think our whole mission is like, you are the cook, you own the kitchen, it's yours, and make what you like, and they have to go with you.
Well, we've included four of your recipes on our show page, including one for fish tacos with pineapple salsa. But you can make tacos out of anything, any meat or any vegetable or cheese. Mm-hmm. But this one appeals to children because they get to assemble the tacos themselves.
And the joke with this one is that I'm lucky. I have in-laws who get to spend the winter in San Diego, so we get to go visit them. And, of course, that's sort of the home of the fish taco, and I've eaten many of them. And there's great ones there. And it tends to be one of those things that it's better when you eat at home if you have a really nice. Sometimes you want the fish taco, you order it, and you're like, this is not what I was thinking, unless you're from San Diego. But, yeah, there's something about if you want your kids to eat more fish, which a lot of people do, it's a great way to do it because you're having everything out on the table, the pineapple salsa if they wanted, the crema or our version of a crema on the table if they wanted, and the fish is so easy to prepare that it's delicious.
Let's take a call. John from Bergen County. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Leonard. You had mentioned chicken breasts. You make a chicken frances, a chicken breast frances. Most people tend to make it as a sauté in a frying pan. But I've heard that restaurants will actually bake the chicken breast. Is that correct? Is there a preferable way of making chicken frances? Is it in an oven?
Can't you bake almost everything?
Are you saying chicken frances? Like the Italian preparation with the lemon?
Right, exactly. Do restaurants generally bake on an oven, or do you actually saute on top of the stove?
Well, it's such a thin piece of chicken, I don't think it would do very well in the oven. And the traditional way is to put it in a flour coating and saute it in the pan, take it out of the pan, and then put a little lemon juice and stock and finish it with some butter. And that's the classic way. Now, if you're talking about just a plain old chicken breast, I think the best way to make a flavorful, moist piece of meat is to start it on the stove, you brown it, and have your oven maybe at 400, 425 maybe, and you put that pan, make sure it's an oven-proof pan, straight into the oven and let it finish cooking for 5 or 6 minutes, depending on the size. And you'd be amazed how juicy it is, how much easier it is than having to monitor it on the stove, and you know, it's a lot more forgiving as far as overcooking.
Can't you also put some slices of root vegetables in there with the chicken?
You would have to start those in advance because they wouldn't cook in that time. But we
have a recipe with that, which is my favorite thing maybe in the book. But it's a roast chicken breast, but you put sweet potatoes underneath it. And they just soak up all the fat and juices from the chicken, and that's what cooks the potatoes. And it's, like, better than candy. I mean, it's delicious.
Well, we've also reproduced your recipe for chicken pot pie on our show page. I tend to think of that as a fairly time-consuming dish, but you have shortcuts?
We do. Well, it's funny, when we initially came up with this recipe for the book, and I grew up eating chicken pot pie at this place called Town Hall Deli in South Orange, New Jersey.
Oh, I grew up eating them in my home. It was called Swanson's. That's what my mother made.
You should have had Town Halls. It was the best. But it's ultimate comfort food. You just say the words chicken pot pie to someone, and like their eyes go in the back of their head, and they swoon because it has this great sort of evocative feeling, but it usually takes a lot of time. So initially we had made individual ones, and then after some talk with our editor and, you know, coming up with actually this cover, they said, can you make one family-style one, which is more reasonable. So you're using frozen carrots and peas, which are fantastic, basically, and no cream, but you're thickening. You're making a sauce with your flour. And then the marsala, which is basically where you're getting so much flavor, is by adding that. And it just all kind of comes together. And the puff pastry. I mean, you're not going to make that from scratch on a weeknight. But the frozen puff pastry is fantastic on the market right now.
You also include bacon. How does bacon change the flavor of the dish? I mean, I know someone who thinks bacon can enhance any dish.
I know.
I think we agree.
Yeah. I remember my first day on the job at Servir, they informed me that we were tasting bacon. And I mean, that was your job, basically. We were tasting artisanal bacon from around the world. And I didn't know at the time you were only supposed to take a bite. I thought you just ate the whole strip. So I think I had like 100 strips of bacon that first day. So I agree, bacon makes that. You don't need a lot of it, too, to make something really pop with flavor.
Patrick has written to us on Twitter. He says he's deathly afraid of foodborne bacteria. Is there a source for knowing when to throw out food? How long does it last in the fridge? What about keeping it in the freezer? Is there a time? I mean, do you throw out something that's been in your freezer for a year because you forgot that it was there?
Well, I think the issue with the freezer is things start to absorb odors and flavors from other things that are, you know, also in the freezer. So I think things like anything that's a bulk, like a soup, tends to keep longer and better But then if you're talking about like some shrimp or some chicken breast, that kind of thing, you know, I think 3 months max. But I don't think there's any – it's funny. We've had some discussions.
We have different philosophies about
I'm more, you know, a little conscientious about getting rid of things sooner. And Carolyn's like, oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You're not going to die.
I'm that way too.
And I leave stuff out.
And I'm often warned you're going to die after you eat this.
Right,
so far,
right.
I'm here.
I grew up that eggs didn't go in the fridge. Eggs could sit on the counter. Butter sat out on the counter. And I think that would horrify some people, but knock on wood, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm always thinking the health inspector is going to knock on the door for my restaurant time.
Well, the rule I've heard about butter on the counter is that you should, as long as it has a cover over it, it can stay out for a while.
Yeah, it won't get rancid. And they have those very cool ceramic butter, you know, that you put a little water in it. You can find those that are European, but you can find them pretty readily. And you keep your butter in that so it stays soft if you want to spread it, which is I like.
You've emphasized tasting every dish, as you said before, but aren't there times when it's kind of dangerous to taste the thing that you're cooking?
Well, because it's too hot.
Well, for example, for years we heard about people who were making something like gefilte fish getting tapeworm because they were tasting the raw fish without, before it was cooked.
Yeah. I think we're talking more you want the components to be cooked, but it's more flavoring as you go. So, for instance, if you're making something like a ratatouille, if you wait until the end to add that salt and pepper, you're basically trying to shoehorn it into the dish rather than building layers of flavor. So when you're sautéing your eggplant, that gets a little coating of salt and pepper. Then the same thing with the peppers and the zucchini. And then by the time it all comes together, you're giving that one final taste to check again for acidity and salt.
You write that it's a good idea to add extra seasoning when you plan to serve the dish cold. More seasoning than when it's hot?
This might be a Harold McGee thing, but I think it's that, cold temperatures dull flavors. So when something cold is hitting your taste buds, you're not going to taste the seasoning as much as you would if it were warm. So you have to account for that.
Right.
And that's why when you have wine that's very cold, if it's a cheap wine, it's better to drink it cold. If
then you
it's a really good wine, don't drink it so cold.
Right.
That's right. And it's funny because it's the same thing with sake. They say, if you're warming your sake, then it's probably not as good a quality.
And it's like, people say, are you born a good cook or can you learn to be a good cook? And I think you can learn to be a good cook. I mean, there are some instinctual things. But not everyone, unfortunately, grew up in a family that was a food family or didn't have that mythical grandmother that we both had who was like this ace in the kitchen and you could sit and watch her. A lot of people just grew up in a family with Swanson dinners or processed food or,
that's why I don't eat those things anymore because to me, spinach, cauliflower, collard greens, they all came in frozen blocks.
Oh, God.
Mrs. Paul's fish sticks.
Right.
You name it.
Right.
So when I discovered that you actually could make things on your own and they tasted better.
Yeah, we talk about when I first left, with my family, we lived in New York City and we moved out to the burbs. And my first time going to like this mega supermarket after having gone to Food Emporium and Citarella and all those places. And there's literally an aisle, the entire aisle is tomato sauces, jar, punch, like hundreds of them. And there's not one hamburger helper, there's 100 hamburger helpers. So there are a lot of people, even though we're in this food revolution, who are still eating that kind of thing.
Well, both of you have moved back to the suburbs, haven't you?
We have, and it was a real wake-up call for us because we were so spoiled. I mean, we would spend our lunch hour going to 3 different stores to get ingredients for dinner. And
well, you don't have the farmers markets anymore either.
Well, we do. I do have a couple
once
of small. Yeah, I have a CSA where I live, which is great. I have a small farm called Ralston Farm, which I'm lucky to have that nearby. But it is different. You have a mega mart, and that's where you do your shopping.
A reminder that we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Toward the end of the book, you've included a list of 10 flavor-boosting ingredients, which you return to again and again. Which of them do you use the most?
Flavor boosters. I think
lemon juice for me, without a doubt. I mean, I have a bowl of lemons on hand all the time. And I learned that, I think, more from my mother, with her, the cooking that she did, Belgian, French cooking. Like, there's so much lemon in everything.
There is a some kind of a thing, a bacteria that's going after citrus fruits these days, and lemons have become incredibly expensive.
They are, I know. And so you use all of it. Like, we use the zest, the juice, you know, use every bit of that lemon before you get rid of it.
And I think that is a great tip about the lemon, is that a lot of people just squeeze the juice out and they think the lemon's done. Well, the best part is actually on the outside, and you grate some of that into whatever you've put your lemon juice in, and you get that whole second layer of flavor.
Would you ever use the plastic lemon or a real lemon from the jar?
No, but we actually, it was interesting. We had a little some focus groups before we started work on the book, because we really wanted to get a sense of what people were missing in a weeknight meal cookbook. And the bottled lemon juice came up, and it was something that we hadn't even considered. So right. I think in our book we actually put fresh lemon juice before the word lemon juice.
No imitation.
You don't include desserts in the book.
No desserts, no apps, because again, this was something we wanted to create a book that really had a laser-like focus on weeknight meals, and we thought, who in the right mind makes dessert and apps Monday to Friday?
I mean, the kids whose mom does do – I mean,
that's fine.
Lucky you.
More power to you.
Right. I mean, we have a tussle every night about, like, you know, a cookie or, you know, but usually for us a weeknight is, if you're lucky, a bowl of ice cream, but most likely, like, you snap off a piece of chocolate and there you go.
You also we have included two other recipes from the cookbook, black bean and butternut squash enchiladas. And you can make that filling a day or two in advance?
Yeah, it's delicious because it's bringing I mean, it's one of our meatless recipes. And, you know, even though people aren't formally vegetarian, they are thinking more meatless. So it's one of those great recipes that's extremely filling. So you have the protein of the beans, you have the butternut squash. But there, that has lime zest in it and lime juice, which really perks it up.
We have a call from Kansas. What city in Kansas, Carol?
I'm in Lawrence.
Okay. Is it just as hard to get fresh ingredients in Lawrence as it is in New York right now because of the winter?
Well, we do have some farmers markets that have, you know, a lot of really good root vegetables. And, you know, they're pulling potatoes and carrots and things throughout the year. But I actually called about the way that I've incorporated Trader Joe's frozen meals into my meals that I make for my husband. He is a full-time student and I work full-time. So I come home, and it's really easy to prepare a three-course meal when one of the courses is already prepared and frozen, and all I have to do is heat it up in a saute pan. The other night I made, like, the steak I bought from a local farmer, and then I steamed some green beans, and then I had this really gorgeous mushroom ravioli and a truffle cream sauce courtesy of Trader Joe's, and that was the starch for the meal. So it's revolutionized the way that I cook in the kitchen.
Well, in the past it was frozen dishes. Now a lot of shops offer prepared dishes. Do you suggest that? Do you go along with Carol?
Well, I mean, I think kudos to her because she is making two things from scratch, which is fantastic. And I feel like a lot of people do feel, you know, unless they're at that traditional like meat and three, like a plate with the starch, the vegetable, and you know, we want people to feel like they can get away from that. So if you're at least cooking something from scratch every night, that's amazing. I mean, it is expensive to buy a lot of these pre-made things, which is why we're trying to pull people, like, to start making more themselves. But if you're cooking at all, like, you're on the right path, I think.
One of the tips that you've included in the front of your book is always wear shoes when you cook. Is that based on a bad experience?
Yes.
Knives fall when you least expect them.
I know. I've had many bad experiences. But yeah, I don't know where I first even heard that, actually, but it's implanted in my brain. And you see, you know, obviously chefs, they have their clogs on, and, you know, because you're on your feet all day, but you will drop a knife at some point. And if you're wearing flip-flops or cute sandals.
Or something hot.
Or something hot, like you're bringing the hot boiling pasta water to the sink from your stove and, like, the cat jumps on you. I don't know. So you want to have something on. Real shoes, not cute sandals.
And no peasant blouses with flowy sleeves.
No flowy sleeves, right.
That's also hazard.
Well, thank you both so much for being on our show. Kathy Brennan, Carolyn Campion, their book, Keepers, Two Home Cooks Share Their Tried and True Weeknight Recipes and the Secrets of Happiness in the Kitchen. One of you works for Glamour, the other for Saveur. Have you gotten a lot of feedback from your coworkers?
Well, the moms are all cooking out of it, which is great, and the dads.
We've gotten a lot of amazing support from them. And also just the most gratifying thing, I think, for both of us is just hearing from friends and strangers that, you know, we've helped them. And
we have a lot of people texting or emailing us when they're cooking something or about to cook
it. And how things have turned out and how we've helped them get through another week.
So that's a lot of fun. We feel like we're in everyone's kitchens now.
And there are a lot of wonderful color photographs in the book. It's published by Rodale. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you
for
having us.
Thanks so much.